Now our reading tonight is still, as you know, in the book of Revelation, chapter 13 tonight. I'd like to especially thank you for coming along that wintry night and venturing out. We're glad to see you. Appreciate your presence. Trust you haven't. Come and take. And that we'll be able to help you. And that you will be the better of being here. We welcome you indeed in a very special way. And this Thursday night is usually our small meeting, as you know. We've got a meetings through the district. And we have to tolerate that. But we're glad to see you and trust you will come back tomorrow night again and on Lord's Day and do the best you can. Do your very best. And we'll appreciate it in the Lord's will. Now, chapter 13 of the book of Revelation, and we commence to read at verse 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power, and his seat, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who was able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 40 and 3 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, could blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and then the dread in heaven. And was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity, and he that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns, like a lamb, and he said as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he made a fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he hath power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark of the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. That will do for you. Now, I think you will all agree, without me going any further, in answering the question that we might well ask would be, what does this chapter teach? And if we had that answer, we certainly would have a wonderful meeting tonight. Because it is, no doubt, in itself, very important link on future events. You will notice very clearly that God has always used human instruments to do his work. If he wanted people delivered out of Egypt, he would raise up a Moses and Aaron to do that. Whatever he's been doing, he has used human instruments in the doing of it. And an imitation of that, when the devil wants to do something, he too uses human instruments to accomplish his end. Now keep that fear in your mind. And we're going to read tonight of two, and we have read, we're going to speak tonight, of two of those instruments that will play their part on the future stage and will do the devil's work for him and do it well and pay the penalty for what they have done. And that's what is before us tonight. Two men that will literally be on earth that will do the devil's work and do it so well that they'll not even change in their doing of it, and they will have, as we've said, to pay the penalty. Now you'll see a great difference between these two men. And you'll see that one is very much associated with political power, domineering power. One who has what we might call the civil power of those future deaths. And the other will take on a more mild attitude at the beginning, will be more deceitful in his operation, and will be operating in the religious realm, and playing the religious part, and emphasizing the worship side of things, and bringing pleasure and glory to the first base. You will equally see that behind the two of them, and operating through them, is what's called the dragon. We did speak on that last night. That's the devil in his ferocious character. So that the devil has these two instruments to do his work. One doing the political work, the civil work, the other doing the religious delusion and accomplishing worship to the devil. But that's the devil's aim in that. He would want to take the place that of God. He wants the honors that God deserves. And he wants objects to, he wants to be an object of human worship. And that's his aim. Remember, he did that in the garden or in the wilderness with the Lord Jesus. He says, all these will I give thee if thou fall down and worship me. Just imagine, actually expected that the Son of God would bow in his presence and give him worship. As if the Lord of glory was stripped to do the like of that. You see how ambitious he is to take even worship from the Son of God if he can get it. But he didn't manage it on that occasion, you all know. Now, as regards the chapter, we've said already it's about two men. You notice that at the beginning, and I stood upon the sand of the sea. That is, John is brought down to the very seaside. And out of that sea is standing in sand. You know, it's a bit of a shifty thing, sand, isn't it? You don't need me to tell you that. And that suggests us of what he's going to behold. And out of the turmoil of the sea, he sees this beast rise up. That means to say that the beast at the beginning of our chapter, he rises up out of the sea. And if you saw any young folk here, you will see that the second beast rises out of the air. Now anyone knows that the sea is that restless thing, always in turmoil. And the earth is a more settled condition. So we assume, and rightly true, I think, that the symbol of the sea is used here to show us that the rise of the future beast will be from the disturbance and the unrest of the struggle that will be going on in the world at that time. You see, many things come up in the midst of struggles. You know that right well. Nearly all the great men of the past have been thrown up, as it were, out of some disaster or some strange circumstance or some commotion that was going on in the world. Conflicts, as you know, produce the great generals. Don't get into that. Some of the men would never have been famous had it been for the wars that they fought. It was the very war conditions that brought them into honor. And you would never have heard of Montgomery and Alexandria and all these Alexander and all these great generals. You'd never have heard of it had there not been the war. It was the war that brought the men to the front. And you see, this
great leader in the political realm, he will rise up out of the sea. I think that is fairly clear. Then you know you're going right into difficulties almost immediately. For you're not only looking at a beast, and by the way, this is not the same word as is used in chapter 4, for there it's the living creatures, it's just a creature, here it's a ferocious beast. And then you're faced with a difficulty that he has 7 heads and 10 horns. Oh, he's a monster as well as a beast. And there's 7 heads on an animal. Now be honest about it, that's a strange sight, isn't it? And then 10 horns. For you see, if it had said 7 heads and 7 horns, you'd be sort of half sensible. But then it says 10 horns and 7 and 7 heads. You see, your thing doesn't even seem to make arithmetic. Now keep your thinking going. As somebody said, you just need to listen every minute when you're in these meetings, where you forgot for a second you'd lose yourself in the story. And upon his head, the name of blasphemy. Now will you please notice that right there in our passage, there was the emphasis on his blasphemy. That is, he's blaspheming God. He's speaking against God. He is the antagonist of the Almighty. And so he's full of blasphemy. Now you don't get that, you see, with the second beast emphasized. And certainly you don't get that emphasized with the evil woman that we were looking at in the Word of God later in the meeting. Now, what will you make, says somebody, of the 7 heads and the 10 horns? See, if we hadn't our Bible, we wouldn't want to make them. But the same book that tells you about that later on will explain it to you. For when you move over to chapter 17, you get a detailed description of what's implied by the 7 heads. So you're not left with any followers. And the heads represent those different forms of government of the Roman Empire that have existed before this great, or he's the 7th one when he arises. Now the 6th already have disappeared. Now will you please remember I said the forms of government in the Roman Empire. Sometimes it was a military form. Sometimes it was the imperial form. Sometimes it was ruled in this way and sometimes it ruled in that. You see the head, anybody knows that the head is what does the thinking. Alright. So these were ways they have thought out of government. And one after another of these have marked the Roman Empire in its existence. And then you will see the 10 horns. Now we're not asked to guess what they are. For the 10 horns turns out to be the 10 kings that will be associated to make the last form of the empire. So that it's 7th runs into the 8th. I'm anticipating later on in the book. The usual method. Now please keep in mind what we said last night and keep repeating it for the sake of those who don't hear every night. John's method of writing this book is to make a statement. Then he keeps you waiting for a while, but eventually, later on in the book, he'll explain what he has said in brevity in an earlier part. Now get that well into your mind, but that helps you to understand. I see if I'm coming up with nonsense and saying things that don't exist. Then again, you will notice that it says one of these heads, now keep your head on when you're thinking of that, was wounded to death. And we learn elsewhere that it was governed by the sword and the snare. Now you take a beast with 7 heads, and there's one wounded to death. And yet when you're reading it on, you nearly think the whole beast was slain, but one of the heads was slain. What the writer wants to show us is this, that there was a form of government known as the Imperial Roman Empire that existed but was slain, ceased to exist. And from somewhere around 479 or thereabouts, or 78, that's of this age that we're in, the Roman Empire has been dead. And the greatest wonder of the future is that it will rise up again. And will live. And come into existence. That will cause amazement in the world.
Now stop for a minute. Don't be jumping in your mind too fast.
Great efforts have been made in the past to revive the Roman Empire. Napoleon got as near to it as anyone has managed until this day. The common market is another attempt to amalgamate.
Used to be feared that there was soon the 10, now I think there'll be 11.
Don't attempt to make the common market now the 10 things. You'll never be able to set in mind when you do that.
You want to be careful that you don't try to explain things too clearly.
Well, can't you see how it's beginning to work together, isn't it? Isn't it beginning to take shape? It'll bring a great difficulty, for instance. Supposing a great man arose over the whole European community. There'd be no problem whatever to get it all organized in a very short space of time.
You wouldn't need to be intelligent to know that. I would largely, as you know, about these things, but I would have enough to understanding to even see that that would be no great problem whatever, even in our own day.
Suppose the church were to rise. It could be no time to demand that they're beating about here for the fear in the present condition of things. There'd be no great changes needed.
10 kings. Now the difference between the heads and the king is made clear to us later on in chapter 17. The heads are consecutive, one after another.
The horns are simultaneous. They're all at one time. But can you follow that here? That is, the heads follow each other. There are different forms of government in the Roman Empire. And the horns are the ten that, as it were, are in power when the beast takes over.
Now you notice this. Now, there are three animals mentioned here. Those three animals have already been mentioned to you in the book of Daniel, but in this passage they're in the reverse order. We have a leopard, we have a bear, and we have a lion. Now you sure children not to hear better teaching perhaps than I got. You could see, I suppose, that I'm limited in the education that I was allowed to have. Sorry about that. I'd love to have been at school for yet, but I couldn't manage it. I had to start and work. But I like to be at school, and I hope you children that go to school, that you never want to get away from it. It's a great thing to be allowed to learn, and I have planned to learn even to this very day. I would like to learn. Wish I could learn. So it's great to be able to go to school and learn. But you would know right well, by looking at these animals without me telling you too much about them, that the leopard, that's the one that springs. Now he was used, as you know, in the Old Testament to illustrate the great exploit of Alexander the Great, who established the great empire, the Grecian Empire. You know that. You've learned that all, I'm sure, before now. And then the bear, the slow going on. We're going on the feet, and then squeeze. You could nearly feel the bear, couldn't you? And then the lion, that terrifies everybody, roars. You think he was representing, of course, the bear, I should have said, was the Persian, and then the lion, if I remember correctly, was representing the great Babylonian. These are the empires that have disappeared. Now don't you see, now just get this way into your mind, that they're all combined. That is, all the ferocious characteristics. Well, I'm not putting that into it, what's in it? All the ferocious characteristics of former empires will all converge, as it were, and all meet in this great monster that is in control. Now will you please keep also in mind that the beast, now I hope you're clear on this, is on the one hand representing the empire. That's the head side of it. And then the other, he is a person on earth in the final stage of that wonderful world program of the nations, what's known as the times of the Gentiles, the time when Gentile power is invoked. Now, another point, before I pass that. All of you who have studied Daniel and know about the image, the great image that was set up in Babylon, and that was given to Daniel as a vision of the world empires, or what's known as the time of the Gentiles. And you know about the different stages down the great mountain. And then a big stone comes out, or a stone comes out of the mountain and smites the end image and smashes it to pieces. Now what I'm only showing you in this point is that all the metals that were smashed by that stone are seen to still be there in their elements when the stone falls. Now that's proof to us here that all the features of the different world empires that have existed, beginning with Babylon, going on to the Persia, and going on to the Grecian, and finishing up with the Roman, all of that converge and meet in this wonderful revived Roman empire, and all will be destroyed by the coming of Christ, as we learn from chapter 19. I hope I'm not going through that too quickly for you, and I hope you're able to follow that. You might think that's very simple. I suppose you wonder that it comes so easy to me to see all that, but it's never easier for me to say it than for you to take it all in a breath or two. Now I hope you're seeing it, this beast. Then you'll notice that the dragon gave him power and his throne and great authority. That is, he will not only be up in power, but he will make those 10 kings, and they'll not need any forcing. They'll be glad to give him place and give him honor. You see, if you had a man that could solve the European problems, because I don't think the Roman Empire sat finished up with the Europe. I hope you're feeling that. I think it includes Asia and Palestine and so on, the right Roman Empire. But if you had somebody to stir up all those troubles, that these points that stuff past the night of time city, maybe you could somebody, wouldn't it? That's a hard to get empire, sure. You see, even supposing somebody would raise up an arm here, I don't know what sort of brains I have here, but supposing somebody would raise up and say, I'm going to square up the whole trouble, and I'll do it. I'm not talking, I'm not making promises, I'm going to do it. Come on, here, they'll have them up in jobs right away. They'll have them put in and say, well, we'll all be done, have a man like that. That'll square that all up, and that ends all that trouble. You know, there's always that type of man. If you can find him, he's a great fellow. Well, you see, here's the answer to it all. And the devil knows that, and he's given him his power, and his strength, and great authority. Oh, no, no, not talking of it. You see, he's both power and authority. I hope you know the difference between power and authority. Many a time, when folks were policemen in the making here, but I wish I would say, they have authority to do things, but they haven't the power to do it. You tell them to go and do it, see, we can't do that. If you have 5,000 people up the street, they make it authority to go and sell them, but you make it easy to sell them, you make it authority. I'm going to go sit with you. The difference between power and authority. And there's many a man of power, but there's no authority to use it. You should talk about the police with their hands tied behind their back. They had the power, but they weren't allowed to use it, they had the authority. So there's a difference, as you know, between authority and power. Well, this one will have not only the authority, but he'll have the power to carry it out. And he says, I saw one of his heads that were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. That's what I've already described. The Roman Empire, there's a break in it. It hasn't existed. No efforts to raise it have ever been fruitful. But the devil will bring it into existence again, and that will be the wonder of the world. To have a world empire. He just over there, I don't know, but I think maybe Russia, and I think maybe America. You know, two big powers, a wonderful way they look out. And what chapter in Revelation do you get America, and where would you look for Russia? In the Revelation, all that sort of stuff. You see, dear soul, you don't understand. Those things don't come into your book of Revelation. That's not the point at all. The point is this, that there will only be one world power come into being, and it will be centered in Europe,
in some way or other, and part of it likely in Asia, and that will be all combined in a ten kingdom empire in a coming day. Now, remember verse 4, and they worshipped the red dragon and gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast and who can make war with him? And that would be the big thing. Nobody there can take him on. Nobody can take him on. He seems to be supreme. No difficulty with that. He will definitely hold supreme authority. Now, you notice again, he was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him as a continued 40 and 2 months. Not this to say, now will you please remember, we've been on this, haven't we, so I'm sure you're getting tired of it now. We have this wonderful period, times and half a time, 3.5 years, 42 months, same period, 1,260 days, the same period. Are you all feeling that? Now he continued that. That means to say now, are you feeling this? His great commencement of mighty power, we're not the beginning of his reign in a sense of power control, but the greatest moment will be when Satan comes down from heaven, and when he breaks the covenant with Israel, and when that will commence the time of tribulation, so that he continues 40 and 2 months. Not too long, you know, for a big proud man like this to have his sweat. Not too long. 3.5 years, you know, is not a great length of time. Sure it's not. Not a great length of time. There he would do that now. Oh, the blasphemy that's flying out of his mouth. You say, what you doing? He's defying God. He has no regard for the Almighty. Says, do you want God? I've heard that. Find your way with the very name of God. Find the blood of earth from the memories of people. That will be his wonderful position. And he will be the wonder of the world at that time. And he makes war with the saints. Ah, you see. Because you see, the saints would want to mention God's name. And the saints would like to respect the Almighty. And the saints would like to say things honorable about the God of heaven and about the things of God. And he can't tolerate that. Because you see, they're not giving him the place that he wants to take. And in order to get rid of them, he will destroy them, as you see, and he will blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And he's given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. And they are all deceived by him, and they are all carried away with him. And then in verse 9, if any man hear, let him hear, let him hear, have an ear, let him hear, reminding us we need to take heed to this, that the whole world will be influenced by him. Now that does not mean that the whole world will be in his empire. But it does mean this, that his power will be so great that there's not another world power would dare to try to put him out of his position and out of his place of honor. That is, he will be respected and reverenced by the whole world in that coming time. That to me is amazing. Because you see now at the moment, you know right well, now you don't need me to tell you that there are just about 2 nations that the world would have great fear and respect for. Time was they had a great fear and respect for England, but that no longer exists. But they have great fear for Russia. Now the whole world has a fear for Russia. You look at that. Nobody wants to think of Russia coming on their doorstep. And they have great fear for America. Not that America would be an invading country or would be selfish in that way, but they have still respect for America. And you see, it's a race between those two who would get in ahead. But here will come another one into power. And he will eclipse all those. And the whole world will be trembling lest they offend him or cause him any, give him any cause for abusing them.
Now then, and he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Don't forget, God is as we're bringing our principles here. He that killeth with the sword shall be killed by the sword. In other words, here is the patience and the faith of the saints. In other words, in the midst of it all, you know what those from Philippians? He's going to reach what he said. He's going to have a fight at something. Don't get too disturbed. He may be slaying you, he may be winning, he may have victories, but when you're short-lived, and God will see to it that we reap what we sow. You know, I hope we think a little bit, brothers and sisters. I don't want to worry you too much. Maybe your mind doesn't work the way mine does. Maybe you have never even sat down, even in your own day, and thought of how men in high places reap what they sow. Do you ever think of that? Yeah, do you think that those who injure the innocent will always suffer? Mind you, that's solemn. God humbles them. Now, their own life thing. Not some of our ancient history. Just their own life thing. Look at the many men. They did things, but where are they? Where are they tonight? Where's Hitler tonight? Mussolini? All these different men that rose up and slew and slaughtered and gassed and killed and starved to death. Where are they tonight? Let us never forget, though we're living in the day of grace, that God's government in the world has never come to an end. He's still overruling among the sons of men and among the nations of men. We should ever remember that. People pay dear for what they do. God sees to it that those solemn words that I quoted, the late Mr. John Knox McEwen, used to tell us when we were young in Christ. He told us they were the most terrifying words in the Bible. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. We spend the early part of our life sowing. We yield the rest of it reaping. And you're a man. He's walking through a prison in America. Long as someone else, or at least he told me the story anywhere. I think it was himself that probably heard about someone else doing it. And at that time, the prisoners in America were sewing post bags. You know the old sack? I think they still use post bags. You can hardly say anything there for you. Some wee men running around with the arms. I suppose you hardly ever see a postman with a bag in his back now, except in the towns. Well, post bags, that was one of the things they got the prisoners to do. We used to get them to make mats in this country and make ropes and things. You know the things that they used to be what they call hard labour. I think it's now watching television they get doing or something like that. They're not asked to do much rough work now. But that time they made them do some hard labour. Now, they were sewing. This man was going past the machine, you know, and the man was putting the bags through. And he says to him, "I see you're sewing it." He looked up at him, "No, see, I'm reaping. I'm reaping." He'd done the sowing ourselves, and he was reaping the consequences in the prison. Mind you, dear soul, that you're not saying, "I hope you're sober tonight." Don't you forget, you do the sowing here, and if you die unsaved, you have an eternity to reap the consequences of a blessed life. You'll have an eternity to regret every breath you drew, and every word you said, and every hour you lived. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Now, verse 11, we come with another verse. Now you'll notice that he is coming up out of the air. That is, things are more stable when he rises. He is coming out of a more settled condition of man. You're not told the length exactly of his dominion or his reign. And you've noticed that he rises up out of the earth. Now I assume, and I hope we all agree, that he's a Jew. He's not a Gentile like the first man. Don't think you get anything about blasphemy, or at least very little about blasphemy in his case. Now, he's coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Now I hope you'll notice that he hasn't sat on heads.
And do you think he is? And he's not like a leopard or like a lion in that sense. He is a two horns. He's set as the dragon. That is, he's the devil's mouthpiece. But he has two horns like a lamb. Now you see, this is the second lamb that we've come on in our Bible, in the book of Revelation. We have the lamb in the midst of the throne, that's the true Christ. And here we have another lamb-like beast. But he's the false Christ. He's the very antithesis of the true Christ. I hope we see that. Now you notice that he exercises all the power of the first beast before him. That is, he demonstrates in the presence of the first beast his mighty power of miraculous operation. Now he's what we would call his lieutenant, his second in command, and his assistant. And he is helping the first beast to retain his high and lovely position. Now notice his miraculous powers in operation in verse 13. He maketh fire come down from heaven. That's why later on he'll be called the false prophet. Because you know that Elijah was able to bring fire from heaven, and he could do the same. And down from heaven, on the earth in the sight of men, and he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles, and saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the first place. Oh. You see, when you're in the book of Daniel, Daniel saw a great vision. Or at least Nebuchadnezzar saw a great vision. And, of course, it was a vision of metal. And the vision he saw had a golden head. But you see, he wanted to make the whole image of gold, because he wanted to be the whole thing. He didn't make parts of it silver or parts of it brass or anything like that. He made it all of the same material, gold. A great big image. That was the great center of idolatry in Daniel's day. Then there's going to be another image made. And that image will be the image of the beast. And this false prophet, this assistant to the first beast, he'll be getting everybody to worship the image of the beast. That's a gift, the devil. Getting what he has wanted, the worship of man. Behind every idol, behind all the false religion, and all those folk who are carried away by spiritism and all that, it's just the devil getting his portion, what he wants. He wants to take what God should have, and he wants to take it for himself. And he wants it, and wants it very dearly. Now you notice that this great miraculous worker, he had power to give life unto the image, or breath unto the image. It's the spirit of the image, I think that's the way. Now you see, he's gone as near. Now when you take me think of this, he has gone as close to the true prophet and to the true Christ as he can go. He can do the miraculous things like Elijah. And then he can also attempt to put life or breath into the image. You can explain that whatever way you like. It's satanic power imitating human life in an inanimate piece of material. That's very sad. That's going as close as he could go to demonstrate the wonderful power of Satan. Now let me should stop a minute and let you folks know. Now, you must not favor with anything that is satanic. Lots of people thought that it would be a great thing if they could investigate all this spiritism and all these different things. And they thought they could master it all in their minds. And before they knew where they were, they hardly knew what they were thinking or what to think. It so mystified them that they couldn't understand it. Never underestimate satanic power. Never overestimate it, but don't let it carry you away. And here's the whole world carried away by the imitation and the workings of this miracle worker, this great deceiver. Now he's operating, getting all glory to the first base, just as my blessed Lord, as you know, in his miraculous powers and in his wonderful workings. Ah, oh, of course he flips it, yes. He was ever bringing the glory to God. So this false prophet will ever be bringing honor and glory to the first base. And he had power to give life unto the beast, and should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be kept. You see, he'll be able to get it to speak. You say, I don't know what that means. Well, you needn't worry. You're not here to see it. And neither will I. If you're born again, you're not here to see it. But there's some answer to all that when the day comes. They're not to deceive people. And people are easily carried away with the miraculous, aren't they? You see, that's what they even would have tempted the Lord. They said, Lord, cause fire to come down. Give us some miraculous sign. He says, there will no sign given to you, but there was a sign of Jonas the prophet. Remember, the Lord had rebuked them for that. They want a sign. They didn't want to get a sign. Another shall come, listen to your Bible. Another shall come in his own name, and him you will receive. Implying that there will be a deceiver in the very land of Israel that will bring to them the very things they want and show them the miracle workings of his power, and they'll be easily proved by what they hear from him and what they see him do. Now he's going to make all not only worship the beast, but where they are themselves. You know, the devil doesn't want secret things. Some of you dear saints, you know, when you slip about very quietly, don't you now? You don't let through your colours too clearly. So you don't. And maybe we could have one in the meeting who says he's saved, and the only time the neighbours would know about it, or the people that work with it would know about it, would hear somebody else telling it, would never hear him say it. One of you boys that say you're saved, do you ever speak to your fellow schoolmates about salvation? Now come on. Do you? When I got saved, you know, the boys were round me, one after another, wondering what had happened there. And I was telling them, I was sort of anxious to be saved when I was a spirit. You doing that? I'm not talking about myself as a great Christian. It's only a country boy. What about you? Do you ever mention it to the boys of spirit? Or do you kick football with them and play with them and sport about with them as if they don't know such a thing in their friends? If somebody goes into the house and asks about you, has the mother to tell the people that you're saved? And if mama didn't tell them, they would never be here. And be honest about it. Now the devil is going to mess people, show their colour. And they have to wear a mark on their forehead or on their hand to demonstrate to everybody that I'm working alone with the beast, and that I'm thinking along with the beast, because it's in my head, it's on my hand, I'm associated with it. Now, in the time I feed you, that God's dear people would do as much for God as the devil's instruments would do for him, it's wonderful what would happen. Did you know this? That our boys, now listen to me, would stand out behind us yonder. There's a football place. I never was in it, and never will be. And all I can do is hear the shouting. But they would stand outside watching football with the snow hitting their very face. They're that thick round urban, they wouldn't know the difference. They would do that. With the snow hitting their face, there are those men that say, and it was an open air meeting and it was snowing. Oh, so you couldn't stand there too well in the doctor preach. You see, they would do for the devil what they would never do for God. And they would. And they would get drenched with wet and rain to get their ends accomplished. And they would put their hand to the bottom of their pocket. And they would squander their money were doing business here not so long ago, and a man was paying, I think it was nearly, it scared me, I don't know what, maybe I'm on the way to hide the deep. Way over, I was doing the parmesan for a seat to get seen watching one man hammer the face out of the other. I thought it was the thickest thing ever I heard of. And the man was doing business, man. Yeah, you mean, suppose he wasn't in the cellar, he was an outside, he was out in the world. You're still alive. Well, he's telling me that he wouldn't mind paying this money to get a seat in the front to see these boys hammering each other. Might even get that in the back street nearly, if you were without paying for it at all. You see, and that's the way he was working. You see, his mind is, you see, and let me that man got saved. I tell you all, the 200 pounds you drop into the box on a Sunday morning wouldn't be hard to count. I'm honest about that. He would do for the devil what he would never do if he got saved. Where are the marks? Are you ashamed of Jesus? Can it be? Has mortal man ashamed of me? I wonder, are we wearing the marks? Are we ashamed of it? Here are men for the devil, doing the devil's work, and they're actually branded. There's nobody in any doubt as to what side they were on. Used to hear about that French woman and the French army that she was linked up with was going past. She, of course, she wasn't a soldier, as you know. And she picks up the floor brick and she puts it on her shoulder and she goes and walks alongside them. And somebody says, "Woman dear, what sort of a fool are you walking up beside the army?" "Oh," she, "I like to show what side I'm on. I want to show what side I'm on." Maybe we ought to be prepared to show what side we're on. I'll not be ashamed of it. For the devil will not listen. Be half-hearted in that coming day. You'll either wear the mark, or else you'll be slain. And it'll just be take it or leave it. There'll be no half measures of it. And then again, you will notice that he will make this a business problem as well. That no man can buy or sell without the mark of the beast. That is to say that if you're not prepared to wear the mark, you have closed the business. And you have to clean a lot of places up, wouldn't it? Close down. Not allowed to sell. And then you went into the shop to buy. No, you have no mark. You can't. No, we can't serve you. I'm sorry, we can't serve you. You must go. You have the mark. You have his name. You're not brown. You're not a slave of the beast. Therefore, we can't do business with you. We just have to let you go. I'm not very sorry. I'm very searching. You see, you need to have some indication of where you stand. Now, those who won't wear the mark, I said, "Somebody, what about them?" Well, many of them, we're pointing this out. You see, this is all going back to earlier meetings. They will flee from the boat situation, and they get away into quieter places, and they escape them that way. But those who don't flee, they'll lose their legs. You see, it's do or die here. And they'll be landed in the heavenly side of the future kingdom, and they'll pay the price of their lives for their testimony. But mind you, that may seem costly, but those who wear the mark, they go down to hell forever. As far as I know, there'll be no such thing as a man with the mark of the beast ever getting saved. Don't think of a hint of that. Once he has become branded, he has sold himself and made his choice, and his choice is given. It can't be reversed. Not to me. Is intensely solemn, because it does mean that the crisis will be so serious that men will be sealing their doom by taking the mark of the beast. Now that would make some of you think, but I don't know whether you know much about this or not, and I don't push it from a gospel preaching, that was understandable. But mind, it would seem to indicate to me that there comes a day and there comes a time in the heart of every soul on earth
when he makes his choice for time and for eternity. There is a line by us unseen. Yes, the cross of every path, the hidden boundary between God's patience and his wrath. Watch, dear soul, the choice you make, because you see it could be for eternity. Many times we look at souls, many of these are big things, and they're near in eternity, and they've been privileged for a lifetime. And for some reason or other, we never see that place. Then the big question arises, what went wrong? Wasn't it all stupid? It wasn't that they weren't faithful. What went wrong? The lately, in an earlier day, have made their choice. And they made their choice to reverse. That's what happened on the solemn occasion. Here's this. We'll have to get it for a better name, for I haven't. Let him that understandeth count the number of the beasts, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, four sixes. Anybody knows that the number six is the number of man. Now here's man, hey, listen to me very carefully, don't let this out of your mind. Here's man at the highest of satanic power, wearing the brand mark of the devil himself. Now it's man. For as we are concerned, now listen to me very thoughtfully at the moment we're closing the meeting. Wasn't it a great moment in our life when we saw that man could do nothing for us? That we could do nothing for ourselves? That we'd come to the end of our own struggles? Are you following that? And we give up what was of man? Return to Christ. And we turn to him, but we could find a new one. And we trust in him. And we were saved by the Holy Spirit of Christ. Are you getting that? We were branded. We were marked as divine property. And we are assured of the inheritance that's incorruptible and undefiled and that faileth not away, reserved in heaven for us. Yes, dear soul, there's a solemn day coming. It's likely not a dearth for many that will wear the mark of the beast once sat in gospel meeting. Maybe sat in a Sunday school class. Maybe read the very Bible that you have a copy of it in your hand. Maybe even were privileged to watch the saints in different exercises and in different experiences on earth. Been awful business now. Even apart from whether you're alive when all this takes place or not. That even the woman are with him, and he's not saved, and she's not saved. And they tell of a business to be with the dead, to be in the lake of fire, to miss something, instead of turning to Christ and trusting him with your soul to go on and miss a home of God. Now these people would be at the present time advantage. You'd be in the city, you know that. They'll be in the shade. They'll be running in the street. They'll have a man just for 3.5 years. Short life. It's all over. Fall under the mighty wrath of God. Short-lived pleasure. A short-lived experience. To end in a drastic and terrible eternity.